Welcome to Executives After Hours, real conversations with real leaders. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. I want to make you a promise that over the next 60 minutes, you will learn at a minimum two things. One, every leader and executive makes mistakes on the way to the top. And two, and more importantly, everyone has a unique story to tell. And that's what we do here on Executive After Hours. We sit down with leaders across a variety of industries, and we talk to them about their unique story. So welcome to the community, and stay tuned for today's episode on your Executives After Hours. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Executives After Hours. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. So today on the episode, we go international. We fly to South Africa, Johannesburg. I had the pleasure to speak with, a few weeks back, the CEO of Strive. It's about creating employee experiences. I'll let her discuss that with you in greater detail. But I have Miss Andrea Golding on the show today. Andrea talks about her journey through life, why growing up in South Africa creates a tight-knit group of people to live with, and know, talks about Strive and why creating the employee experience. So today on the podcast, Miss Andrea Golding, CEO of Strive, coming to you from Johannesburg. If you want the full-length interview, please go to the website. Check it out at www.drjameskelly.com. Go to the podcast tab and listen to the full interview. In addition, go there. Share with me your adversity moments. I want to learn more about you and how you transformed you and your leadership experience. Going for a project. Quick little update. Book is still going well. I haven't talked about it for a few weeks. A little bit of funding issues. And once it's resolved, I'll talk about what that was and how that came about. But it's getting there. It's getting hammered out slowly but surely. Book still scheduled to come out in spring, April 2018. And finally, I have recently, through the generosity of the PR firm, am working with the PR firm starting later this year. Really excited about that. I'll tell you more about that later. All right. See you. Today on Executives After Hours, I have the pleasure to have Andy Golding, the CEO of Strive, straight from South Africa. And I am straight in the Middle East, so we are connecting halfway around the world again. So this cannot be any more of a global podcast. Hello, Andy.
Hey, James.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Brevity is not a must here. In fact, this is like the anti-brevity show. Like you have to talk to me here.
All right. I can talk for hours. So
awesome. So, you know, Andy came to me through one of my content partners, which is Engage Me Online Magazine. They did an interview with her. So for my audience, just go to engageme.online. And you can find that article. I think it's still up, or at least it's archived, I think, last month, one of the two. But anyhow, you know, so Engage Me, this is a free plug for them. They are the place you kind of go to learn about employee engagement for South Africa and the Middle East. And so the other thing about Andy, which my audience needs to know, is that she loves the word rad. And when Andy emailed me about the possibility of coming on the show, she used the word rad. And I'm like, well, I'm sold because you used the word rad. And tell me the story about the person who said, don't use that word. I'm really curious about that. What was the context, I guess?
So it's actually somebody who's recently joined me in Strive, who's now working with me, my teammate. And we know each other from the company that kind of set both of our careers on their trajectory. And our boss there used to use the word rad fair amount. And I think that's where I kind of picked up the habit. And I said something, and she said, don't say rad. And so I looked at her, and I said, very cheekily, I said, rad. And she said, no, we have to cull that word from the vocabulary. And I said, never.
A battle of wills.
It's entrenched in my vocabulary. It's just one of my go-tos.
It just takes me back to my youth on the West Coast in the States. That's what it does. It makes me feel a homie a little bit. So So tell my audience, you know, in Johannesburg, you know, my audience is predominantly the U.S. And in the Middle East for the most part. So talk to my audience a little bit about, you know, life in Johannesburg, but more specifically, life as a child in Johannesburg.
Look, I think the first thing is there's so many misconceptions around how dangerous it is to live here. Oh, don't go there. It's so dangerous. It's not really true. You know, growing up, I think we lived a different life. We lived a very different lifestyle to kids who grow up in first world countries and be in, I suppose, countries where there's the pedestrian oriented countries or foot traffic oriented. You know, we grew up with our parents taking us to and from places. We would never really jump on the bus by ourselves and go off to a friend's place. It just wasn't what we did. I had some friends who lived around the corner from me, and yes, I was allowed to walk to them, but not at night. But again, for us, that was just normal. That was how we lived. It was our reality. And it wasn't until the first time I went overseas and spent time with other people my age that I realized just how different our lifestyles were.
And was that kind of I don't know if slap in the face is the right word, but did you feel like, wow, I wish it was a different way in South Africa? Or did you just accept that there was a difference between the two?
I think I definitely felt a little bit shortchanged. I look at the lifestyle that youngsters around the world in sort of your safer, more first world countries live. And I definitely felt like we lost out on some. We definitely lost out on some stuff. But what I do think also happens is the flip side is that you spend a lot of time with people who you're very close with. You spend a lot of time with family. And I also think that we got some stuff and we maybe got some benefits from our lifestyles that kids with much more, I want to say freedom, which I don't really know is the right word, but kids with much more freedom got. You know, there's two sides to everything.
So give me an example of that, though. So what do you mean by you may have got things that your family members who lived in more loose societies, I guess?
I think for me, the big thing, and again, this is based entirely on my worldview and my upbringing, is we spend a lot of time with family and a smaller group of people who are closer around you.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have an older brother. And I mean, look, he's a boy. I think he was given a bit more freedom than I, as the girl, was.
So it got me really thinking about, you know, something you said earlier about having fewer relationships but deeper relationships as a child. Do you carry that forward now? So do you have a very select group of friends that you have, but you have very deep relationships because you all share the commonality of living in Johannesburg?
Yeah, look, I think we've got some friends sort of across the country, but definitely I would say that's definitely shaped the way that I hold my relationships, and that's fewer, much more connected relationships.
So how does that impact you from a standpoint of making new friends?
I have a lot of friends who grew up in a very insular community and have literally gone all the way through the schooling system, the university system, and through life now with that same tight-knit group of friends. Mm-hmm. I took quite a different approach to life in that I did a lot of different extramural activities. I danced. I put myself in lots of different places. So I find it really invigorating to get out there and put myself really far out of my comfort zone, meeting new people.
Where do you get that from? Is your mom and dad more adventure-seeking, more outgoing? Come from?
I have no idea. If I'm honest.
No, I want you to lie to me, Andy. I don't want honesty. I want lies.
No, look, if I'm honest, if I look at my parents, both of them are fairly sort of keep it close individuals. Neither of them are overly adventurous. My brother and I definitely got a spirit of adventure from somewhere where we're not quite sure where it came from.
Yeah, I mean, human nature is very simple. Simple, stupid term, but like it's very like when you think about it, like your environment tends to shape you're part your internal working and part your environment, right? And so for you, you were this competitive dancer who represented South Africa, and you did some of these adventurous things that made you kind of go outside your comfort zone, probably. being on stage, speaking at a young age, that's environmental cues where that probably gave you a lot of confidence, I would imagine. So, you know, in thinking that way, do you see the connection now between like this early on public facing activities, for lack of a better term, and your sense of confidence and openness to change and newness?
Absolutely. I think, you know, sort of being pushed onto the stage for the first time at six, A, as a dancer and B, as a speaker, it definitely shaped sort of who I was, the, you know, my sense of adventure going forward. I mean, when I went to Spain, I jumped on a plane. I had two nights accommodation booked and a return ticket 6 months later and zero other plans. I just thought, I'm going to wing it.
That's my style.
Yeah. And I had the best adventure. But, you know, people in my close family and my close friends thought I was completely nuts.
So now let's kind of move forward a little bit, because you have this company that you own called Strive. And I'm going to kind of go back and forth here a little bit, but tell me what the company is exactly.
Okay, so Strive focuses on employee experience design. The idea being that businesses need people. People need to work. And if business and people can thrive together, business does better, people do better, and everybody wins.
Okay. So it sounds like a type of, you're using the word employee experience as like an employee engagement.
No. So the way that I look at it is employee experience is the missing link between company culture and employee engagement. So culture is kind of what companies want to achieve. It's their sort of gold standards. Engagement is how people react to that. And experience is what dictates engagement.
Mm. Can you explain that to me in a different way? Yeah. I'm trying to get my head around that. Can you say that again? I'm following the logic.
As a company, you have these core beliefs and the way that you act.
Mm-hmm. So the behavior.
Your employees, 100%, your employees experience that. And the experience that they have at work each day with the way that they're treated, their environment, the work processes, that experience that they have of your company's culture dictates how engaged they are at work. If they're having a good experience, they're going to be engaged. They're going to be putting in all of the effort. They're going to be giving your customers a great experience. If that experience of your culture is poor, why would they care about your customer experience? Because they themselves are disengaged. Because we're just humans. We're all human beings.
I'm sorry, what was that word you used to describe a negative environment?
A negative environment.
You were like, puh.
A poor experience.
Oh, poor experience. I thought you did one of those like sounds where you're like, peh, like it's bad, like peh. Poor experience. Sorry. Okay. That was a little bit of the again, like, so we're going to jump back and forth a little bit here. I want to then go back to, how does Andy get into this? So you go to university, you quit university. Let's quickly talk about that, right? So why did you go to university and quitter, and then go back? So talk about that decision process.
Look, there's a lot of pressure for anybody leaving school to know what you want to do. You need to know where you want to go with your life and what you want from your career. And I went for one of those phenomenal, not career assessments. And it told me that I should either be a lawyer or a physiotherapist, which was really confusing.
They seem so similar, really. What if you were a physio that could actually represent yourself in court? I think that would be awesome.
So I decided to try the law thing. I went to university. There was a couple of contributing factors that made my experience at university awful. I had a broken foot. The campus was huge, and I was trying to crutch my way around campus. It was a massive environment. It was the first time I'd been in such a huge environment. There was a mess up with my registration that had me back in the registrar's office every day, just fighting it. I wasn't enjoying the coursework, and so I just suddenly said, you know what? I don't want to do this. This is the rest of my life. I'm not going to spend 3 years, 4 years, 5 years studying something that I'm absolutely hating.
Mm.
So I quit, and it was the best decision I've ever made.
And what was your conversation with your mom and dad like around that?
They weren't thrilled. I can tell you that.
There was no high fives and hugs going on. Is that what you're saying?
No, there was none of that. Look, from my family side, there was no pressure to rush into university. My dad never studied, and he's built multiple very successful businesses. So he said to me, you know, if you don't want to go and study, you don't have to go and study. The pressure I felt came from my circle of friends, sort of my peers.
So what did you end up graduating with?
So I ended up graduating with a degree in brand building and management.
All right. So what does that mean? Yeah. From where? Sorry. And then what does that mean?
So from a school called the Brand Communication School. It's a school called Vega, and very, very specialized in the advertising industry. And basically what that was, it's all about brand strategy, going out there, building brands, you know, helping build them, create them, market them, and make them into something from nothing to something. And it was very much grooming us to go into the ad industry world, so ad agencies, all of that. And I very, very early on in my studies realized that was not where I wanted to go. It was just not the agency world was nothing, did nothing for me, for my soul, or for my ambitions. But what
why
I did
is that?
Find fascinating.
Like, yeah, go ahead. I was going to say, why is that? Because that's such as a young age, it's such a sexy career, right? Like in the ad agency.
So for me, I just had a problem with advertising on a sort of moral level, where you put phenomenal effort and huge money behind convincing people to spend money on things that they probably don't need, and they could probably use their money in better places.
And so what did you do after you finished university?
So while I was at university, we case studied this company called Missing Link. And the founder, Rich Mulholland, who had this great – and this company was known to have this great internal culture and just be a great place to work. So that seed was planted at university or while I was studying. But when I finished studying, I kind of had one of the best opportunities of my life land in my lap, where I made the South African dance team. So what I chose to do was pursue my dancing after I studied, and I danced professionally and competitively for 2 years. We competed in Germany, we competed in Austria, we competed all around the country. We basically just had a really fun 2-year adventure. But by the time I was hitting that 2-year mark, we weren't having a great experience with the studio that we were working with. We weren't treated very well. So that seed started again. That seed had started germinating. And my brain was turning to mush. Mm. It was just not academically taxing. I needed to use my mind. And so I went to Missing Link and I applied for a job, and I sat in my interview and said, you have to hire me because I haven't applied for a job anywhere else. And I just quit the studio. So, and luckily they did. And while I was at Missing Link, I proved my theory that work doesn't have to suck. You know, I could get out of bed every day actually really wanting to go to work, show up, contribute, give my all, do amazing work in a place where they made me feel amazing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know what it sounds like, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, I've been known to do occasionally, is that you almost like you have a sense of fairness or justice embedded in you. Does that?
Definitely.
Because you've kind of brought up a couple different ways, not using those words, but talked about both those jobs that sucked and being treated wrong and blah, blah, blah. And there's this sense of fairness. I think that's a really interesting connection, because what you're trying to do with your company now, Strive, Andy, is also create experiences that are positive and healthy and fair to the employees in that organization to engage in the overall culture that is trying to be created. Does that ring true? Or am I way off base?
No, that definitely rings true. I think I also just see innate potential in human beings, and far too often we're not doing anything about it. You know, far too often people's full potential is just left completely untapped. Mm-hmm. And I think, but too often, companies have used people on a very superficial level just to, you know, move this box from here, put that nail in there, put that bolt on there. When the world that we live in now, we need people. We need to be accessing their full potential and their full intelligence. And so much of the time, we're not. And I think it really frustrates me that people have so much potential. Look at what people have accomplished in the world thus far, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Why aren't we using people more fully?
After you went for Missing Link, is that when you started Strive, or did you do something else in between?
So I left Missing Link, and I decided to go. That was when I decided to take my adventure to Spain.
So what made you decide to do that? Yeah, like, why did you leave? If it was such a great place, why go?
The travel bug, I'd always wanted to travel. My plan had been to travel when I finished studying. But then with the opportunity with the South African dance team, I held back on that and stayed local. You know, yes, we competed overseas, but I didn't travel. And my time at 21 Tanks was unbelievable. But I couldn't ignore that travel bug that was just like kind of gnawing away at me. I'd been trying to teach myself Spanish for a good long time at that point, and trying to teach yourself a language that no one around you or hardly anyone in your country speaks.
Yeah, it's impossible.
It's pretty difficult. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I just decided, you know what, as I said, I was the youngest in the company. I didn't need to be settling at that point. So I thought, I'm going on an adventure. I'm hopping on a plane and going to Spain. And I decided quite a few months before that I was going, then got all my ducks in a row and went off to Spain and had the best 6 months of my life.
And so what did you do when you came back? Like, could you have gone right back into Missing Link then?
I had the opportunity to, but when I came back from Spain, I had a customary quarter-life crisis. For the first time in my life, didn't know where I was going or what I was doing, and that was terrifying for me. I'd never not had a plan before, and I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to work in the culture space. At that point, even for me, my vision was fairly it wasn't crystal clear, but I had an idea of where I wanted to go. It was something to do with this internal branding, company culture. And I looked around for companies in South Africa who were doing this kind of work, and I couldn't find anyone who was doing it. And I'll never forget, I was sitting on the couch at home one day, and I was having a moan about, oh, woe is me, what am I going to do with my life? And my stepmom turned around to me and she said, I'm sick and tired of your whining, just do it yourself. And I kind of looked at her and said, okay, cool.
That was that nudge you needed.
100%.
All right. So listen, I only have you for a few more minutes. What I want to do is we're going to quickly do this thing where I investigate your authenticity through five random questions and kind of end on that note. So what I want to know, we're going to start with question one here. And so this is the only programmatic thing that I have. And even this is suspect at times. Question one is, you know, I think one of the things that's really important for anyone to grow as an individual is self-awareness. So how do you, Andy, practice increasing, heightening, working on your self-awareness?
What do I do to practice self-awareness? I think a lot of my upbringing, what I've lived through in my life and some of the experiences that I've had have made me a pretty self-aware person. I'm very honest with myself in that if my gut says something, I listen. I'm also, unashamedly, I'm my top priority in that, you know, the longer standing relationship anyone has in their life is with themselves. So if you can't be honest with yourself, you're not setting that relationship up on a good footing. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm blessed in a way that I enjoy my own company. I love sitting, having long conversations with myself, not out loud in my head, for the record.
Sure.
I think, but
you know where else you get it though?
You
said it.
You can So you can kid anybody, but you can't kid yourself.
Well, I would disagree. I think plenty of people kid themselves, because I think that as human beings, our mind can play some pretty significant tricks. But I think that for you, you may not see that because you have the ability to see through it. I would also say you get a lot of your self-awareness is from the feedback you get from people and information you seek, whether you know that or not. Like when you go out and talk to your mentors, that's a check on you and your ideas and your thoughts and your actions, and are they in line with the best Andy or not? And I think that's another great way that you probably do that is just get feedback.
Absolutely. And I think that's another thing. And it's probably one of the biggest lessons I learned in Spain that's influenced how I've built Strive is I was learning Spanish while I was in Spain. I mean, I was horrendous. I couldn't speak a word when I landed, but every time I stepped out of the house, I made an effort to have a conversation with somebody, no matter how badly I bungled up the language. And just that putting it out there and being okay with making a fool of myself has meant that when I have ideas in Strive, which is, I mean, it's precious. It's my baby. They're my ideas. They're a reflection of me, of who I am. Just still having the ability to go and ask someone what they think. And then when somebody tells you it's actually a pretty terrible idea, being able to sort of internalize that and separate, okay, it's not me as a human, it's my idea. How do I grow from this? How do I become better? That was kind of a big part of the journey.
Yeah, that's huge. All right. Question two. Yeah, you've alluded to this a little bit earlier. We talked about this idea of justice and fairness. So tell me where this idea of integrity comes from for you.
I think I have a fundamental belief that, you know, I can't respect anything until I respect myself. And I think it comes such a tie-in question to your self-awareness question. It's you've got your life to live, and if you're not living it with integrity, what's the point? Like you might only get one shot at this. You might as well do the best job that you can. And I think for me, the integrity thing is just so fundamental.
Did you get that from your parents?
I think so. I definitely think I got the integrity thing from my parents. Hugely my dad. I mean, okay, my dad and I are the same human, just different genders and different ages, but we're literally, we're so similar. And I definitely think that's where I get my, you know, and also if I look at my mom's side of the family, there's so much, my mom as well, there's so much integrity. It's an integral part of who we are as a family. See what I did there?
That's awesome. All right, question three. You know, one of the things I found in talking to a lot of people is this idea of compassionate leadership. And there are two really types of compassion, and you've already talked about one. One is self-compassion, so forgiving yourself for mistakes, taking care of yourself, you know, first. But how do you practice compassion to other people or for other people, I guess? And just to be clear, so sometimes my audience gets confused by this, and I've had guests who use this wrong. So I'm going to, if this is offensive, I'm going to define it for you so that you're clear, is that compassion is different than empathy, where empathy is just only about feeling someone else's feeling, understanding their feelings because you have done it. Compassion is taking that a step further and saying, I understand what you're feeling, and I want to relieve your suffering. Now, the word suffering has this loaded sense to it, but suffering could be something as simple as I spilled coffee on my pants, shoot, and you'd be like, oh, let me get you a new coffee, right? So suffering is kind of this loaded, like has to be this, you know, like massive thing, and that's not true at all. It could be something very little. So just to put it in context.
Okay, so I think absolutely, look, the business is called Strive. It's soon to become Still Human. And, you know, just the fact that we're calling our business Still Human, everything that we do is for people, about people, by people. Mm-hmm. You know, we always say that at the end of the day, it's no matter how digital the world goes, we're still human beings having, creating, and desiring human experiences. And absolutely everything that we do is pushed through that lens of human to human. And that being said, we get it wrong sometimes. I mean, you know, my business partner and I, we can squabble, but we're human, you know, and it's it's what happens. So I think everything for me, just I try and approach situations from a, I try and not only look at the world through my worldview, which is very difficult, but maybe just always try and create, have this awareness bubble in my head that they're not seeing the world the same way that I am. I see the world one way and nobody else sees it exactly the same way. Just trying to bear that in mind in all interactions.
I love that. Okay, two more questions and then I'm going to let you run. So here's a situation for you. Tell me how you act, how you would react or act or do or behave or whatever verb you want to put in there. So you walk into an auditorium and you are tasked with meeting three people in the next 10 minutes. How would you go about doing it? What strategies would you use? What would you say? What would you do?
Okay. First thing I'd probably do is try and make someone laugh. Just because that would break the tension for me as well. This would be quite intimidating. I'd probably go up to someone, and one of my favorite things to do is find someone who doesn't have shoelaces and tell them their shoelaces are undone. Because inevitably they look down.
So cheesy. I like it, but so cheesy.
But it's funny, right? Because everyone gets a laugh out of it.
Yeah.
I would probably go up to someone and just randomly ask, you know, pizza or sushi, what would you prefer? Because that's always an interesting conversation starter. And the third one, what I always find happens is you start a conversation, there's always people around and people sort of drift and move into conversations. They drift in and out of conversations.
Yeah.
Also, I like to try and always bless people who sneeze around me.
Yeah.
Because inevitably they're quite, if a stranger says bless you, you're always just like, oh, cool, thanks. And then that's an easy opener for a conversation. Just get in there.
So that's the first time I've asked that question that way. So it's kind of interesting to see how you would do that situation.
You know, I mean, the other option is also just to walk up to somebody who you make eye contact with. And that's, I think the biggest thing is make eye contact with people, because eye contact opens you up for actual human contact. Mm-hmm. So you catch someone's eye, walk up to them and be like, hey, I'm Andy. What's your name? What do you do? Why are you here?
Yeah. I mean, like old school, like just like introduce yourself. Like, hey, I'm Andy.
Yeah. Just go traditional.
All right, so my final question that I ask everybody, and then I'm going to let you skedaddle? I don't know what that term is. Anyhow, we'll make up a term. I'm going to let you get on your saddle and ride off to the sunset. So Andy, you definitely are very self-reflective and aware of your strengths and weaknesses, which I think is a really awesome thing to do and be able to do at such a youthful age, so to speak. I mean, you are a millennial, but I think what's great about you is that you're an evolved millennial. So now, and I think that's pretty awesome. But how do you, for where you're at now, how do you define happiness?
How do I define happiness? Cheapers. Talk about ending on an easy question. not at all. How do I define happiness? I think this comes back to that what I said earlier about, I spend a lot of time, I like to spend a lot of time with myself and thinking. And I think for me, happiness is, I can take a look at life and I can go, yeah, things aren't perfect, but I don't ask compared to what, you know, I think the way things are, it's pretty cool. Yeah, there's room for improvement and I'll work at improving it, but it's not, I think for me, it's just being able to look in the mirror and look outwards at life and go, yeah, pretty cool. I'm good with this and I'm not satisfied. I'm not planning on, you know, stopping and reining it in. It's just having fun. I'm having a jaw, as we would say locally. I'm having a good time and I want to keep getting up and doing this.
That's awesome.
And that, I think, for me is happiness.
Well, Andy Golding, CEO Strive, thank you for your time, energy, willingness to sit down with me on Executives After Hours.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been a blast.